This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Joyce Go here in the studio with me, 6 o'clock on Wednesday, the 12th of September. Hello, guys. Welcome back from the long weekend.
Hello and good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Oh, Han. Actually, I know how you feel. This morning was really tough waking up, wasn't it? Yesterday, I woke up and went, oh, is it time to go to work? And then went, oh, yeah, it's time to sleep in. This morning was tough. But we will keep you in the know all throughout the morning, keep you company all the way till 10 o'clock right here on The Morning Run. In fact, I think in the US, it's still the 11th of September. A significant date there in the U.S. U.S. President Donald Trump and the First Lady Melania Trump have visited a memorial in Pennsylvania to mark the 9/11 attacks some 17 years ago.
Yeah, it was the deadliest foreign attack ever on U.S. soil. I think that killed nearly 3,000 people. And I still remember, you know, the night when that happened. I mean, at the time when it happened in the U.S., it was at night. I was still studying in Melbourne. I remember watching it on TV, and it was just unbelievable. It's shocking.
Yeah, you know, and here we are 17 years later. The hashtag never forget that is making its rounds on social media once again. All those heart-wrenching videos, tribute videos, and pictures are making its rounds again, making sure that we never forget this, this day in history.
Yeah. Right. So America's future is not written by our enemies. America's future is written by our heroes, says Donald Trump. He spoke at this newly inaugurated Tower of Voices Memorial. It is a structure, a really tall structure with 40 wind chimes to commemorate the people who lost their lives in that tragedy. Still in the U.S., Hurricane Florence. Now, this is a weather forecasters there are warning of Hurricane Florence. It is expected to strengthen, and it is by far going to be the most powerful storm to threaten the Carolinas in nearly 3 decades.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite scary. I think this whole, all this, what's happening with the global weather, I mean, definitely global warming is happening with, you know, you hear of earthquakes happening, you hear of storms and hurricanes, and now this is heading to Florence. Hurricane Florence was, I mean, what it's saying is that it's still, 845 miles, about 1,360 km off Cape Fear in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still making its way to whatever that's in its path.
Yeah, so what was it, Virginia, Maryland, Washington, D.C., North and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I lived in Virginia and North Carolina for about 7+ years or so. And, you know, again...
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
wow.
So, is it common?
Yes, but obviously not one of this size. You know, so I've got Facebook friends already again, you know, posting that they're evacuating. Those who are think they're in safer areas already opening up their homes, you know, to those who might have to move,
right,
and, you know, so they can move in. Mm. Plenty of pictures of empty shelves in Walmart. All the water,
Stocking up, is it?
Okay. Water, bread, toilet paper, you know, that's all cleared out already. So they're just kind of bracing for the worst. I'm hoping, at least for my friends over there, that, you know, it's not too bad. Because these hurricanes, you know, sometimes do weaken once they hit landfall. Fingers crossed that's what's happened.
Okay, it could make landfall on Thursday near North Carolina then. All right, well, over in India, the Supreme Court has dismissed an appeal to stop forest rangers from killing what they call a man-eating tiger or tigress in the western state of Maharashtra. So the Supreme Court in India said it will not interfere if forest rangers are forced to shoot the tiger if they fail to capture it. Officials are saying that the tiger has killed 5 people. But activists say they're questioning, well, was the tiger really responsible? What do you guys think about this story?
Yeah, whether or not the tiger was just it's a survival tactic.
Yeah,
right,
for deforestation, you've made their habitat smaller, and now you want to shoot it for attacking people that's threatening its survival. Survival.
But I think, you know, for those on the other side of the argument, it's about, you know, again, placing human life at the top of the food chain, so to speak. You recall, say, Harambe. for example.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so that
the gorilla.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the gorilla, the boy fell into an enclosure and they took down Harambe, right? So there's that hierarchy there that I think is being employed in this situation as well.
Well, we'd love to hear from you. What do you guys think about this story? Whether the court was right to dismiss this appeal, stopping forest rangers from killing this tiger. All right, WhatsApp number 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to take a look at Jack Ma's retirement plans post Alibaba. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:11 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Melissa Han and Joyce. That was Hold Your Head Up by Argent. Good morning, Ro, who's WhatsApped in and weighing in on the decision by the Indian Supreme High Court to, I guess, not stop park rangers from shooting a tigress who has been accused, shall I say the word accused, that of killing villagers. However, Ro says that for the highest court in the land to set a precedent that it is okay to kill a tiger in a country where villagers often do, in Ro's opinion, is wrong. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning, Ro. You too can weigh in on this conversation at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So over the weekend, so actually on Monday, it was on Monday, wasn't it? Alibaba's co-founder and executive chairman, Jack Ma, said that he was going to step down to pursue philanthropy in education. So he turned 54 on Monday. Happy birthday, Jack, which was also a public holiday, I believe, in China, known as Teacher's Day. So that made his announcement, I guess, even more profound.
Yeah, he was a teacher before. Well, recently he's come out to say that, you know, a couple of things I think he said that made people sit up and go, what? Was he said that, you know, he regret founding Alibaba. I think he famously said that was one of the biggest mistakes I made Alibaba because of the enormous pressure and responsibility he had on his shoulders. And he's saying that, you know, that's why he wants to retire in a way, because, you know, he would rather die on the beach than in his office.
Yeah. Look, it's very confusing, right, when these really successful people, again, he is one of China's richest persons, right? And you know, it's very confusing when you have these people make these statements, because on the other hand, for the rest of us in the 99%, we are constantly, you know, being ambitious and trying to emulate some level of or some semblance of success that can mirror what the likes of Jack Ma, etc. have done. Yet they make it sound so flippant, right? You know, and I just want to read this one quote that Jack Ma said. You know, he said, "If I can, I still can have a next life, mm-hmm. I will never do a business like this. I will be my own self. I want to enjoy my life."
Right.
While others, you know, millions out there are craving
for his
life.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so I think it just boils down to, I guess, different people have different ambitions, right? So if you're any less ambitious, it doesn't make your life any less worthy of celebration. One of the quotes, you know, I think when reading some of his comments, one of the quotes that really stuck with me, first of all, the die on the beach thing really stuck with me, but he also said, Jack Ma also said that every day is like being as busy as a president. I don't have any power. I don't have my life. And I guess as the boss, you're on call, as a boss of a company like Alibaba, you're on call all the time and you are that busy. Whether you want to scale back, and if that is seen to be having less ambitions, is that necessarily a bad thing?
Well, you got to just ask all my Tinder dates, you know, when it comes to expressing this lack of ambition. Like,
have you been called having a lack of ambition?
No, but, you know, they want to make sure that you are this ambitious person who's financially secure and all that stuff.
They have,
you know,
a long runway and a few high potential,
yeah, you know,
kind of.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? So, you know, whether or not it's a zero-sum game, right? You know, whether ambition has to come at the cost of your happiness. Because, you know, you would think that ambition also implies that, oh, you're not quite content with where you are in life right now, what you have. Mm-hmm. So you got to strive for more. Then you got these comments from Jack Ma saying, well, I'd rather have, you know, a school teacher's salary than his multi-million dollar package.
Yeah, and he said that his happiest moment in life was when he was just making, I think, 91 yuan. That's about 13 US dollars per month as a poor school teacher.
Sorry, how much US? How many?
13 US
13.
dollars, 13
wow.
US dollars, 26 cents. But do you think it's because it's kind of like because he's tasted what's it like now to be that tycoon. Or maybe the grass is always greener on the other side. We don't know until we actually taste it. And you're like, oh, actually, it's not that great. Because now looking back, he's saying that, oh, I was happy when I was a poor school teacher, right? So it could be a grass is greener on the other side. I don't know. There's no perfect ambition or perfect life.
Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of study this in communication theory as well, right? You know, who says it, you know, matters as much as the message itself. So it's one thing for Jack Ma, a multi-billionaire, to say these comments. But perhaps you ask someone who's 35-year-old, still living off mom and pop, and say, yeah, I don't need ambition. Whole different meaning right there.
I feel like that was a sore spot with a 35-year-old.
Hi, mom. Hi, dad.
All right,
Scott. I'll move out soon.
16 minutes past 6 o'clock. After this, we're going to be looking at the National Registration Department's encouragement of parents to seek their advice when naming kids. Would you? We'll ask next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello and good morning if you've just joined us. This is The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Tan Chung Han. 6:21 on the clock. That was The Prince by Madness with and we're looking at some stories on the National Registration Department encouraging parents to seek their advice when naming children. So the NRD, they're saying that registration of unique names, well, that's allowed. But apparently the NRD has a guideline for two categories of names. So one is objectional and the other is inappropriate or undesirable names. And I didn't know this, but apparently there are guidelines. This was triggered by a case that of a couple naming their children after fruits. So I believe they named their son Muhammad Durian and their daughter Nur Rambutan.
Yeah, actually, their names came about because I think it was given to them by their grandfather, right? Or something along those lines, if you read the story. And his name, actually, Muhammad Durian, how it's spelled, it's actually Durian.
Okay, right? So D-U-R-R-Y, and another word, Y-A-N, Durian,
Yeah.
Look, so I guess this is the localized version of Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin calling their kid Apple. Right? So they're naming the kids after fruits, and now you've got stars and celebrities who are
places. Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's so many weird names out there.
Brooklyn Beckham, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, whether or not the government has a role to play in the convention of naming your kids, I think that's up for discussion here, right? Because you would think that it's a very personal affair and that the name might mean something within the family context that might be lost when it comes to public officials.
Yeah, maybe. So maybe, you know, if like you said, Joyce, the grandparents named this, maybe the father had a dusun, you know, and this was how the family made its living. There could be a backstory that we don't know. However, it's just not limited to Malaysia. In 2008, in New Zealand, there was a 9-year-old girl whose parents named her Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii.
Yes.
I'm going to repeat that. Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii. And she was put into court guardianship because so that her name could be changed. So the judge, in a written ruling, was really upset with this, said that this growing trend of parents choosing unique names for their kids is getting out of hand.
Yeah, actually, this girl, Tallulah, she actually refused to reveal her name to her friends. She told people to call her Kay. Because she's scared that they'll tease her and mock her, right? Yeah, so that's
so public mockery is something too. You know, whether that is considered child abuse.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very valid point because you can imagine the kind of abuse that these children will go through their entire lives, right? But then, okay, I mean, that was my initial reaction. But then when I kind of was thinking more about it, well, the kid could actually own it. Right, you can actually own the name, right? So, for example, my name, I'm legally known as Han Tan in the States, right? It's on my social security card and whatnot. And I've got, you know, college friends who, when they first hear my name, Han Tan, they said, oh, I'm so sorry. Literally said that.
Why?
I'm so sorry, you know, because they think it's a funny name. But I've totally owned it. And guess what? People will never forget you. I bet you, no one will forget Rambutan and Durian. Right?
Yeah, that's
They'll
true.
Be
yeah,
like
that's
the
true.
Most popular kids in school.
I
mean,
agree.
Maybe for the wrong reasons.
All right, okay. Well, I have a personal anecdote to share. So my mother, my middle name is Melissa Melina Idris, right? So my mother told me she wanted to name me Merlin. after the wizard. And my, can you imagine if that was my middle name? And I actually was really grateful for my dad for making that last minute veto at the National Registration Department, not telling her. Right. So my mom found out much later that my middle name was not Merlin as she wanted, and said it was Melina. My dad changed at the last second.
Well, what's wrong with that? You know, then you're this wise
But
figure.
Imagine the public mockery I would have gotten in school.
It's fine.
I've forever been known as that magical kid.
Yeah, and anytime there's a stone there, you know, like there sticks something in there, well, you know, like that's Merlin's stone or knife and stone.
Tell us, do you think that the National Registration Department should have these guidelines? We'd love to hear from you. And if you would, follow these guidelines, apparently there were twins named Benson and Hedges at some point in time.
All right, I've got a localized version of that. It was triplets. It'd be Gaia, Mutu, and Keunggulan.
I would love to see that. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello and good morning. 6:40 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. That was Phaser Days, but with Little Uneasy. On BFM 89.9. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Tan Chung Han and Joyce Go here with me. Now, over the long weekend, I don't know about you guys, but much of the talk I had over Teh Tarik over the long weekend was about Serena Williams' US Open final defeat. And questions, I believe, until today are still being asked about her behaviour. So in case you missed it, Serena Williams was fined $17,000 for code violations and was docked a game. But now we have, I guess, some people saying that it was more of a case of hashtag me, 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 as opposed to hashtag me too. Others are defending the Serena's behavior, but it's really a conversation that isn't dying down anytime soon.
Yeah, so she used the card of the sexist card, saying that, you know, she was penalized because she's a female, right? As opposed to, she said, you know, the guys get away with bad attitude on court all the time.
John McEnroe comes to mind.
Yeah. You know, so why do I have to be penalized for that? But I don't know, so this brings about the question, you know, just because men, they might get away with bad attitude on court, does that make it okay for us ladies to follow with that bad attitude on court? Because she was throwing her racket, she was pointing fingers at the umpire. I mean, it's just full on, I mean, just meltdown on court.
But it's not the first time, right? We've seen this before. Yeah. So I think there was a confluence of events that happened with this that made it such, I guess, international grabbing headlines.
Right. Because in the lead up to the US Open, you recall how Serena Williams won plenty of brownie points, plenty of goodwill over the tussle over her dress code, right? Recall that she initially wore that bodysuit.
The compression suit, that's right.
To help with the potentially life-threatening symptoms, you know, after her pregnancy, right, or rather after her delivery, right? So, you know, there was plenty of goodwill there. But then to see her fall from such heights, I think that's what makes it so painful, right? So coming back to this final in particular, CNN actually did this piece about how, well, not really, whereby guys, and I guess I'm speaking on behalf of men here as the sole representative on the Morning Run right now. You know, so the guys are actually, you know, penalized just as much as well for smashing records. They named Novak Djokovic. Apparently, you can go on YouTube and find this whole compilation video of Novak Djokovic just slamming records one after another, and he'll get penalized. Mel, you mentioned McEnroe, same thing, right? Mm. So they get penalized as well, right? So whether or not that justifies or that allows Serena Williams to engage in similar behavior, I think that's up for debate. Yeah.
All right, so where do you guys fall into this conversation? When you have these chats, do you feel, how do you respond to it? Are you against what she did, or do you think that there was an element of double standards here?
I think she was being quite a spoilt diva for me, I feel. It was kind of like a drama queen thing, because she's like, she's very respected. She's like the star on the court, and then she's being beaten by the underdog, right? And at the time, because what happened was, first violation was because her coach was giving coaching, mm-hmm. and that to which her coach admitted to, right? That happened. That was first violation. Second violation was because she threw the... So it kind of... It all happened. I mean, it's just factual if you watch what happened, right? And for her to use that sexism card, and she even used the mother card, bringing in her daughter, I just... For me personally, I don't get that, because why... Is it a convenient excuse? Is it really real that the guy was sexist? Because if, as Han mentioned, CNN did the story, BBC also did a story on... And they have data and analysis to show how many guys were penalized for bad behavior on court versus women. Could be because guys play a longer game, because they play 5 sets, women play three sets, right? But just that. And if you look at what happened on that particular game, not just on gender or what, her attitude on court, and how I felt, for me, how that overshadowed Naomi Osaka, who won as well. I mean, if you're talking about gender biasness, your opponent was a female as well. Right? I don't know. What about you, Han?
Well, okay. See, it's very hard to criticize someone like Serena Williams without coming across as potentially sexist or racist, right? Because that is part of the public narrative, right? Now, here you have...
Well, she has. She and her sister have been victims of racism and sexism.
Exactly.
So you have to take into account all the scar tissue that's accumulated, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
It's a build-up. It's not one thing that triggered. It probably isn't just the one thing that's triggered this. It's probably a build-up of all the racism and sexism that the Williams sisters have had to endure, especially within the tennis, within the game, right? That has probably led to this moment.
Right, and that's where I agree there, because that is the broader context. You know, this is a long storied career that unfortunately in the present is marred by this really unfortunate final, right? So, you know, it is a really touchy one, and I kind of want to give her the benefit of the doubt, you know, because I'm sure there's plenty of emotions going into any final. And what more, again, the specific lead up to this US Open, you know, with even the dress, or rather that outfit, that suit, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, I'm willing to cut her some slack here, but, you know, obviously the rest of the world, there's plenty of vitriol aimed at her.
But is she being fair to her opponent, though? Because, I mean, that in that case, like,
look,
what she did...
I agree with you that was completely unfair to Naomi Osaka, right? You only are going to win your first US Open once. And that moment was completely stolen away from her with the booing and all that happened at the awards ceremony.
Yeah, so whether was it a hashtag me moment for Serena, or hashtag
I love that. That
me,
was the BBC.
Me too, yeah.
We can't take credit for that. That was the BBC with hashtag... Me, or hashtag me too. Tell us what you think. Which hashtag was it? We'd love to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll come back with more on this story. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Arlo Guthrie there, coming into Los Angeles. This is The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tanjung Han and Joyce Goh. 6:51 right now. We're talking about the Serena Williams defeat over the weekend and the conversation surrounding it. Ro has weighed in on WhatsApp saying that protesting umpires call, that's common. Breaking rackets, also common. Being black and a woman on the tennis circuit, not common. Thus the massive outrage, that seems like it. So he's saying it's fitting that we're all talking about it still, given the accusations of sexism and racism following the umpire's call. I do want to say, though, that it is worth taking a look at this specific umpire, because you have to, I guess, take, you know, different umpires have different, I guess, ways of sticking to the rules. There are some umpires who are sticklers for, you know, for following the rules to the letter, regardless of the sex of the player. So it is worth looking at whether this umpire himself has practiced double standards in his past calls.
Yeah, this umpire, Carlos Ramos, mm-hmm. he is, I think there's a story in The Telegraph that says that he is a notoriously strict umpire. Mm-hmm. He's known, you see him, and he's been an umpire in these tennis games for many years now. And if you look, coming back to Williams' case, right, she did break the rules 3 times and receive 3 penalties.
Sivaness has weighed in on WhatsApp as well, and she says that She reckons it's hashtag me too instead of hashtag me, 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 because the trigger was the code violation for coaching. And Serena didn't see it, according to Sivanes. And that riles her up because it is done all the time, apparently, in tennis.
Yeah, okay. It can be done all the time, but that doesn't make it right, I feel, for me. I mean, and her coach admitted that he was giving coaching tips after that. So that for the umpire to give a penalty for that, I mean, a violation for that means it did happen. That was factual. It's just how she reacted, right? She should be a professional sports player on court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. If you're going to go with the line of reasoning, right, in a way, but you stick to the letter of the law, yeah, she broke those rules. But if others are getting away with it, I mean, if I were in her position, I would feel the same way as well. Why am I being made the exception? Why am I being made the lesson, you know, for the rest of the world or the tennis playing world to follow, right? Because if, I mean, there should be some consistency on the part of the regulators or the authorities, in this case, the umpires as well, right? Because I saw the post-match interview with the coach right after the match ended, and he said, well, you know, plenty of coaches all do the same thing, and you can see them doing that on the court as well, and yet they can get away scot-free. So why is she, Serena Williams, being made the exception, not the norm?
I think what you're trying to make out of this is that she's the victim, but it's not just her. There are others who do get penalized. It's just, like you say, I mean, it depends again. It's very subjective.
Yes, it's on the umpire, right?
Yeah, it's like up to your boss, right? Or like you know, right. Why some people can, I don't know, come in at, in an office, you know, like why some people can stroll into work at 12 o'clock after lunch where I have to come in at 10 a.m. You know, it can be, or, you know, there can be a lot of different things, but that, again, falls on the umpire. The rule books are there. Mm. It's whether or not they execute it.
They enforce it. That's right. That's my full name on Twitter. Wade is weighing in on this conversation. He is saying, I assume it's a he, he probably posted Serena in her tutu on his Facebook. That was a graceful and dignified protest, according to That's My Full Name. The recent tantrum was a disappointment. So loser, she could be firm without being hashtag me, me, me. Mm. This is like Kanye ruining Taylor Swift's moment at the VMAs.
Well, yeah. I don't know about that. Okay, look, Kanye ruining the VMAs, you know, that's a bigger exception than people throwing rackets on a tennis court. That happens a lot more. Now, at risk of getting a bit more technical, the smashing of the rackets, that is a violation that is called out by the umpires for both the male and female games. It's the signaling by the coaches. That's where she seems to have a sore point about that, right? Now, going back to the example that you used there, Joy. So if, let's say, your colleagues all stroll in at 12 and when they're supposed to come in at 10, but then you get singled out, wouldn't you then feel hard done by as well by your boss?
I will go have a chat, but, you know, don't go full-on tantrum like it. And because of that, you take it out on your colleagues who come in at 12, because it's not their colleagues' fault. It's the boss's fault for not enforcing.
I think that's what Serena did. You know, so she went to the umpire. She was very, very graceful to the winner of the US Open.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's what she did. And emotions run high in sports.
Yeah, definitely.
You're not going to expect them to be, you know, saints out there.
Yeah, but for me, it's because the way she said, oh, because the guys get away with it, you know, why not me? I just feel that because other people get away with it, if it's wrong, it doesn't mean that you can do it and you expect to get away with it. That's just my take on
that.
Sure,
yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I also think it's worth discussing the cartoon that came out, right? So an Australian newspaper found itself at the center of a race row over a cartoonist's depiction of Serena Williams. In fact, this paper, the Herald Sun in Australia, has doubled down on the support for this cartoonist and has republished this cartoon on their front page this morning.
Wow. So it looks like they're just going all out with the cartoon again.
Well, critics are saying that this cartoon was racist and sexist, but the paper is captioning this cartoon with the headline, "Welcome to the PC World."
Yeah, and I have to agree, you know, again, especially with Aussie humor, right? I saw the cartoon and you can take offense, you can choose. You can choose to take offense at basically anything you want, right? You know, and so it's really much dependent on how you interpret this cartoon. I saw this cartoon. The cartoonist says that this is calling Serena Williams out on her bad behavior in particular. Again, goes back to what I was mentioning earlier on the program, right? Whereby it's hard to criticize somebody like Serena Williams without coming across as being sexist or racist. So you have this cartoon there. And yeah, likewise, that cartoonist is feeling that, bearing the brunt of that sentiment there.
Yeah. I think you can, you know, Han. I think you can acknowledge there are double standards in tennis without necessarily criticizing or diminishing the experiences of racism and sexism that the Williams sisters have experienced before.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Thank you so much to everyone who has weighed in this morning. We'll come back and take a look at those messages after the 7 o'clock news bulletin. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on Wednesday, the 12th of September. Welcome back from the long weekend. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh, and in this hour, we'll catch you up with how the papers are framing today's political news, as well as a look into the business headlines. But first, I'd like to come back very quickly to the conversation we've been having in the past half an hour about Serena Williams' behaviour at the US Open final. Philip Santamaria says that concerning Serena's behaviour, well, to me, it's a case of, oh dear, how sad, never mind. We really have more important Malaysian issues to deal with than considering tennis divas.
Well, Philip, thank you very much for that message. Again, it is not a zero-sum game. We have 4 hours here on The Morning Run, 24 hours on BFM programming. We cover a wide range of issues here, so it's not an either-or thing, but we do note your concern. So, you know, on that note, we will be segueing into a local hot topic in just a bit.
Yeah, and one of the biggest local political issues that we are watching closely today is PKR is set to announce the parliamentary seat that Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim will be contesting in. So later today, I believe at 11 o'clock in the morning, PKR Sekjen Dato' Saifuddin Nasution will be making that announcement. He's also alluded to the fact that the seat is not the Pandan seat, which is currently held by Anwar Ibrahim's wife, Datuk Sri Dr. Wan Aziza.
Yeah, well, the front pages of today's papers, I think we have the star with the headline, Anwar gets ready for PD, and Sinar Harian goes with Mana Pilihan Anwar. That's a question mark there. Online portals also, they've been weighing in. They have, I think some of them are going with, I think Malaysian Insight has a story on Port Dickson argument for Anwar. Also, Malay Mail Online goes with Anwar contesting Port Dickson seat, question mark, no discussions yet. This is what Negeri PKR chief says. So, yeah, everyone's just speculating and, you know, all eyes today on what the announcement will be.
Yeah, but still, I think the expectations are very much focused on Port Dickson. That's P132. Currently, the seat is held by PKR's Daniel Balagopal Abdullah, who won GE4, or that seat, with a majority of over 17,000 votes. So, yeah, very healthy margin there. One that would be deemed safe for Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim if he does indeed contest that seat.
Before we get into which seat is going to be vacated to make way for Anwar Ibrahim, I think we should also ask the question, zoom out a little bit and ask the question whether someone should vacate their seat for Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, right? Whether he should wait his turn and contest in a by-election as do all elected members elected by your constituent.
Good point, but I guess in this way, some of them, you know, there were always plans for Dato' Sri Anwar to come back, right? It's just a matter of when. And as Mel said, you know, does he have to wait like everyone else? Yeah, that's a good point to make. But it looks like they are making way for him, and just whether which seat and when.
When is a very valid point, Joyce, because the timing of it is quite revealing, right? What is the rush to fill in a seat for Anwar to become an MP? It's been, what, 3.5 months, 4 months maybe, now coming up to 4 months. So you want to know, I mean, what is the rush to have Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim fill a seat? Is there something to be said about perhaps, a concern for his position within the party that he feels the need to fill a seat now?
Yeah, so once again, you know, tongues are wagging about why and how and all the backroom dealings. You know, you notice over the weekend, you got public comments made by Tian Chua. Also Rafizi saying, well, what's going on? Who actually knows what's going on? Looks like Tian Chua is not in the inner circle, the trusted inner circle, right? But coming back to the question that you mentioned there, Mel, I mean, it's a case, a classic case of your political ideals versus the realities on the ground, right? In the ideal world, you like to think that all the principles are actually met. You know, everything is followed by the book. And this kind of ties in with that Serena Williams discussion we had earlier as well. In an ideal world, you like to think that all those are upheld, but there are political realities that have to be dealt with. Political realities either within the PKR party, you know, the factions that are, I think it's a public secret now, where, you know, that are warring against one another, that could derail the Pakatan Harapan coalition as a whole, you know, versus the ambitions of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim actually fulfilling that pledge made by Pakatan to make sure that he does indeed become the next prime minister.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, you're saying infighting. I think Tian Chua came out on Twitter to ask in public, right, is this a Democratic Party or a secret society? I mean, there were talks. I mean, there was a lot of talk that, oh, there's infighting going on. There's some drama going behind the scenes. But it looks like it's slowly coming out in the open right now.
Yeah, it is quite an open secret. And what will this kind of in bickering within the party mean for the unity of the party? Perhaps what the party needs is a unifying factor, a rallying, a person that the whole party can rally behind. Is that the role of President-elect of PKR, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim? My question is also why the Deputy Prime Minister is not vacating her seat for her husband. If there needs to be someone who vacates a seat, why not Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Azizah? She has made it public that she intends to step down if and when Anwar becomes prime minister. So why not vacate that seat, right? If that is in fact the route that Anwar Ibrahim wants to take.
Yeah, well, I think that came up in your breakfast grill as well, right? Now, I think I'm speculating here based on what I'm seeing. There is a distinction to be made between her role as an MP, because she did win that seat outright,
exactly,
versus being a deputy PM. You know, so with Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim expected to become the Prime Minister of Malaysia, then she would then step down as the DPM to avoid suspicions or accusations of possible nepotism.
You know what? We're going to get in touch with Ibrahim Sufian, or Ben Sufian of Merdeka Center, in about an hour's time to have him, I guess, unpack all of this for us. We're going to be asking him more about what he's expecting ahead of this announcement. You can stay tuned for that. If not, if you miss it, catch it on the podcast or from our BFM app. That's at 8:30 with Ibrahim Sufian of the Merdeka Centre. After this, we'll come back and take a look at the protest by the students for Mazli Malik's appointment, the Education Minister Mazli Malik's appointment of President of the International Islamic University Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.